Before we get into today's episode, I want to let you know about a source of powerful free resources to help you as a parent or grandparent get equipped to invest in the faith of the next generation. Our Next Gen website has been designed to help empower you to navigate tough issues with the young people in your life. At Next Gen, you'll find articles, entertainment reviews from a Christian perspective, parenting stories, helpful parenting guides, and even answers to the tough questions. All these resources are free as you engage on the front line of raising the next generation for Jesus. So why not register today at premierinsight.org/resources to receive free resources from NextGen. That's premierinsight.org/resources. And now it's time for today's podcast.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Hello and welcome back. I'm Justin Briley, Theology and Apologetics Editor for Premier Unbelievable, currently bringing you a season of shows looking at Lewis's shorter works with Alistair McGrath. And this week is The Grand Miracle, originally preached as a sermon in 1945. This essay by Lewis uses the imagery of a diver to explain the significance of the incarnation as God stepping into creation to ultimately redeem it. By the way, thanks to Dion, who left us this review. Really interesting podcasts. You not only get a great overview of who C.S. Lewis was, but moreover, it makes you think about God and the different narratives in life. How am I going to tell the story of God? Well, if you can leave us a rating and a review like Dion did, please do so. It helps others to discover us. And if you like this show, you might enjoy our other podcast too. Matters of Life and Death is one of the newest, a brilliant weekly show with bioethicist John Wyatt and his journalist son Tim. Do go and check that out at premierunbelievable.com, where you can also register for updates, bonus content, and to support us too. Welcome back to the show. We're currently in the midst of a series of episodes in this season in which we're looking at some of Lewis's shorter writings. Today, we're going to be looking at an essay he wrote called The Grand Miracle in 1945. Alistair joins us again as we look at this. As I've said before, these ideas and essays seem to pop up in various places. As I read it in God in the Dock in preparation for this, I thought, I'm sure I've read this somewhere else, and lo and behold, yes, it's in Miracles as well, another book by Lewis. So you can find this in various places. But tell us where this had its first life, this essay called The Grand Miracle, Alistair.
Well, this essay began life as a sermon. It's really interesting. There's a church in London called St. Jude on the Hill, and during the Second World War in 1945, they thought they would invite some very prominent lay Christians to, in effect, preach sermons on topics they thought were important. And so they had Sir Stafford Cripps, who was a well-known government minister, but they also asked C.S. Lewis, and Lewis went down and preached this sermon. And actually, I have to say that it reads very, very well. I think they must have liked it enormously. And of course, the church now will prominently display this book of their preachers, and there is C.S. Lewis, and they have it's there for you to see. But I think it's a very important essay because it takes the form of a sermon and shows that Lewis realized you could preach this stuff. Actually, it would connect up with real life questions for a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely. Just out of interest, how frequently did Lewis sort of accept invitations to preach, as far as you're aware? Was it something he was in the habit of doing frequently?
Not that often. He preached two university sermons and this sermon. Otherwise, he would give talks. I think Lewis saw himself as a speaker, not a preacher. So one of the questions that very often I have to ask is that when you look at Lewis's sermons, this one or indeed others that we're going to look at, for example, The Weight of Glory, they don't come across as sermons. They come across rather as well-written pieces. But anyway, I mean, Lewis clearly thought there was something in this piece that would really speak very deeply to a congregation. And personally, I think he's right.
I mean, in an age before these things were recorded, you know, who actually collected the material? Was it Walter Hooper later on who sort of was able to bring together these writings of Lewis?
Well, Lewis obviously kept all his speaking engagements, and Walter Hooper very generously brought them all together. I mean, there are stories told about, a lot of this stuff being thrown out by Lewis's brother Warney after Lewis's death, and somehow Walter Hooper managed to save them from the bonfire, that wow. sort of thing. But happily, they are there and we can enjoy them and learn from them.
Absolutely. So as you say, this was originally preached at St. Jude on the Hill Church, April 1945, quite near the final phase of World War II. Perhaps, you know, he was drawing on that inspired it partly. Interestingly, though, given it was a sermon preached shortly after Easter, it's much more of an incarnational Christmas sort of sermon, because it all deals, doesn't it, with the incarnation. That is what the grand miracle is. A Christian might assume, just reading the title, that it might be a piece on the resurrection, but it was the incarnation, really, that Lewis viewed as the greatest miracle of all.
Well, that's right. And indeed, when I first read this sermon, without knowing when it had been given, I assumed it was a Christmas sermon because it worked so well. And then I realized actually it was just slightly after Easter. So, but you're right. I mean, for Lewis, it's the incarnation which is critically important. Everything else radiates out from that. That's why he's so fond of Athanasius of Alexandria's, a very famous book on the incarnation, because for Lewis, that really summarized what matters about Christianity. But it is about the incarnation, and it's a very, very thoughtful and reflective explanation and imaginative representation of what the incarnation is all about.
Here's a quote from it. The Christian story is precisely the story of one grand miracle. The Christian assertion being that what is beyond all space and time, what is uncreated, eternal, came into nature, into human nature, descended into his own universe, and rose again, bringing nature up with him. Now, this is quite important for Lewis. It's not just about, as it were, God becoming human, but something about the redemption of nature itself in that process. So tell us a little bit about that, Alistair.
Well, this quote you've just read to us is a wonderful summary of the opening of John's gospel. And what Lewis is saying is, you know, that we think about the incarnation, God enters into human history, and that is wonderful. It's very, very exciting. It is the grand miracle of Christianity. But Lewis is saying very, very clearly, it's not enough to say God entered into human history. We have to remember also he entered into human history to bring us to where he is. In other words, God's not saying, look, you guys be good and you can come to heaven. No, it's I'm going to come from heaven to find you and bring you home. That's what the gospel's all about. It's not about us having to achieve our way to God. It's about God graciously entering into our history and bringing us to where he is. So it's a wonderful affirmation of divine grace, if you like.
Let's talk about one of the central images that Lewis uses in this. And he was always a master of using an analogy or a metaphor, wasn't he? But the central image of the sermon is of a diver. I'll give a specific quote from this, because I think he writes this so very well. And then you can tell us maybe about where this particular analogy came from in Lewis's own experience. As he says at one point, or else one has the picture of a diver stripping off garment after garment, making himself naked, then flashing for a moment in the air, and then down through the green and warm and sunlit water into the pitch black cold freezing water, down into the mud and slime, then up again, his lungs almost bursting, back again to the green and warm and sunlit water, and then at last out into the sunshine, holding in his hand the dripping thing he went down to get. This thing is human nature, but associated with it all nature, the new universe. So firstly, you know, it's a memorable example that Lewis is using there of this diver, but it comes actually, I think, from his own personal life. He was at one time, he had got into the sort of that that whole thing of diving, hadn't he?
Yes, in the early 1930s, Lewis learned how to dive. And it was exhilarating for him, I have to say, that in effect, going down deep and then coming back up. And, it was a personal experience for him, but he realized it had a deeper significance. And if you like, in this sermon, he's working out how that analogy, in effect, conveys theological truths. And Lewis is very, very good at this. Very often, you'll find an analogy which actually you can, if you like, pin on lots of theological points. So the analogy, in effect, brings them all together in a single narrative. And I think in this case, this works really, really well because it brings out so many things about the incarnation. It is about God entering into a dark, dangerous world in order to grasp something that's really important and justifies the effort, and then going back up and actually bringing this to safety. And of course, what is it that he's bringing back up? Well, it's us. God did all of that for us. So it conveys the risk, the endeavor of the incarnation and its outcome. It's not just God entering into history. It's about God entering into where we are in order to bring us to where he is. It's a wonderful analogy.
Yes, and in that sense, obviously it encompasses the other great miracle of Christianity, the resurrection, because in a sense, the resurrection is, if you like, the flip side of the incarnation. It is that bringing of everything into this new, redeemed, restored reality. Lewis obviously feels that while we've had the incarnation, that future reality is still something we hope for and we long for and we pray for in that sense.
Very much so. And actually, in his writings, Lewis tries to talk about that, but he very often does so in a rather indirect, rather imaginative way. If you think of, for example, the ending of the Chronicles of Narnia, I mean, clearly he's saying there's more to come, but he's slightly vague about it, but vague in a very, very nice way, I have to say. It's a lovely ending. But Lewis is really saying, look, focus on this, but there's more to say than this. This is really important. It's the grand miracle, but actually there's a lot more as well. But focus on this for the time being.
This is where he says, and this is, again, a sort of theme he's come up with during this, is that this is the sort of the thing that makes sense of the whole story, if you like, this grand miracle. He says, this is why I think this grand miracle is the missing chapter in this novel, the chapter on which the whole plot turns. That is why I believe that God really has dived down into the bottom of creation and has come up, bringing the whole redeemed nature on his shoulders. The miracles that have already happened are, of course, as Scripture so often says, the first fruits of that cosmic summer which is presently coming on. Christ has risen, and so we shall rise. St. Peter for a few seconds walked on the water, and the day will come when there will be a remade universe, infinitely obedient to the will of glorified and obedient men, when we can do all things, when we shall be those gods that we are described as being in Scripture. And then he goes on to say, but, we're obviously not there now, but it's something so in a sense, he anticipates that what Christ has begun in going down and then coming up in the resurrection is something that we will all experience in some new way. But as you say, it's all picture language at this point. What exactly that will look like is sort of only fed to us in images at this point.
Well, that's right. And actually, I think he's picking up on a theme from G.K. Chesterton here. Chesterton once said, by believing one seemingly impossible thing, everything else makes sense. And so when Lewis talks about the grand miracle, I sometimes think to myself, that's Chesterton. If you believe this, everything makes sense. It is the central theme. Get this right and everything else clicks into place.
Yes. I mean, another analogy he uses of it near the beginning of the essay is that he says, supposing you had before you a manuscript of some great work, either a symphony or a novel, then one comes to you, a person saying, here is a new bit of the manuscript that I found, or the central passage of that symphony, or the central chapter of that novel. The text is incomplete without it. And the only way you can judge whether that's true is by putting it in its place. And if it suddenly makes sense of the whole story, if it's suddenly everything, it's bringing out, then you say, yes, well, this must have been the missing chapter. This must have been the missing part of the symphony. And I think that's the way Lewis sees it. Again, it's coming back to this motif we talked about in the last show about the true myth, the myth become fact and so on. But that if all of those other stories are sort of there, suddenly this story kind of takes that and says, this makes sense of all those other stories. That is that the kind of sense I'm getting here with what Lewis is talking about?
I think it is. I mean, obviously, Lewis has a particular congregation in mind, but you can't help but make those connections. I think Lewis wants you to, because Lewis has set out a story, and if this story is right, it makes sense of so many other things. One of them is why we tell stories like this. The other is alternative stories, which in effect seem incomplete or inadequate, but this one brings them to fulfillment and says this is what they're really pointing to, and this is how they find their fulfillment.
I mean, it's interesting to me as well that in the course of telling this, he talks about his own childhood. He references that and says, when I was reading the ancient myths and the gods and, the corn kings, as he calls them, then you turn to the scriptures and suddenly, well, of course, Jesus is another corn king. Jesus is, this dying, rising God and so on. But then he kind of says he was almost frustrated by the fact that the New Testament don't recognize that that's what it is. It's almost as though, Jesus himself, when he sort of takes bread and wine and so on, doesn't recognize it. And it actually comes out of a tradition, the Jewish tradition, which would have had no connection really with those pagan traditions and so on. And yet this is where the story makes sense. So it's interesting that Lewis sort of feels almost like there's this sense that it had to happen this way. It had to happen from this unique particular people with their own story suddenly makes sense of all these other stories in that way.
One of the points Lewis is bringing out, I think, is that although we don't really find this in the gospel narratives, it's there in the New Testament as a whole, particularly the letters. Mm. And actually, once you begin to follow these through, you begin to realize there's real imaginative and intellectual depth here. And that's one of the things Lewis is responding to here and trying to get his audience to see as well. So I find it a very, very moving and powerful sermon.
Mm. Well, it's really interesting and helpful to be able to. I'm glad that if it was Hooper, we have to thank for rescuing it from the bonfire before Warney chucked it out. Then he's done us a service, because it's great. It's a great chapter to have and an essay to be able to reflect on. All of these, really do fit together in so many ways. The last three that we've done here, Alistair, dogma and the universe, myth became fact, and now this one, the grand miracle. Perhaps that's why they were put together in this volume that I've been reading them in, of God in the Dock. But it's been really interesting tracing some of Lewis's thought in this particular sermon. We will be looking at another sermon in a future edition of the show when we get to The Weight of Glory, which I think is in some ways one of his most significant pieces of short form writing. So we look forward to that. But still to come, we're going to be talking about, is theism important? Is theology poetry? First and second things, and one that's been shared quite widely in my social media in recent months, on living in an atomic age. Those are all future shows you can look forward to as we continue these discussions with Alistair. But for now, thank you very much for being with me today.
It's been great fun. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for being with us, and do come back next week. Links to premierunbelievable.com, where you can find out more about the show, are with the info of today's podcast. Registering at our website gets you access to bonus content, a free ebook, and lots more besides. There's also links there to our next Big Conversation live event with Michaela Peterson and John McRae, happening on Tuesday the 12th of July. You can join online for free from anywhere in the world to be part of the audience for that. Unbelievable.live is the link. That's with today's show as well. See you next time.